The girl avoided Brunn for days, but late one evening she slipped into Brunn's room.
She don't scare me. I'm from Ranger Bowie's house. He's the only one can mute me. They can't. And he wouldn't, as long as I don't argue or nothing. Telling you about patience isn't arguing, it's explaining. Explaining is fine as long as it's not men.
Brunn smiled, a smile that seemed to crack her face. How long had it been since she last smiled?
I wish they hadn't muted you. I'd sure like to know what it's like out there. Patience, she won't tell me about it.
She stopped, listening, then crept closer.
I wished I had your hair.
She put out a hand to stroke it. Then she turned and vanished into the dark corridor. Brunn traced what she'd heard on the wall, fixing it in her mind, as she once would have repeated it aloud.
Ranger Bowie.
What an odd name. She didn't remember the men using any name like that on the ship. Had they even called each other by name? The nondescript man in the checked shirt bellied up to the bar and ordered. Beside him, two men were talking about the captain's choice of policy.
Well, we're free men, but I don't see any call to stomp on an anthill. It's my right, but I'm not stupid enough
to... You calling the captain stupid?
I'm saying that taking Outlander women for our own needs is one thing, but taking that one and then bragging about it is just asking for trouble.
It proves we're strong.
One turned to the man in the checked shirt.
What's your opinion, brother?
I heard she had yellow hair.
Everybody knows that. They're hoping she'll put her hair on her babes.
Someone down the bar leaned forward.
You talk about that gal from space? The yellow-haired slut? She had twins, did you hear? One redhead, one dark. Odds on, they're double-fathered. No. I'd bet on it. She won't be out for another 2 months, though. They say the twins need her milk longer, being smaller. Oh, I'd hoped.
The other men looked at each other, sly grins twitching their mouths. This one probably had only one wife, and her homely as a mud fence.
Well, who wouldn't? Don't get that many blondes, do we? Put your name on the list is all I can say. They're showing her now, if you want to see if it's worth the tax.
Believe I will.
Crockett Street Nursery.
The nondescript man in the checked shirt was not the only one who wanted to see the outworlder blonde mute who had birthed twins. They'd been confirmed fraternal and double-fathered, which meant she might throw twins again. A woman who could drop two eggs at a time was even more desirable. At first, he wasn't sure. He had been shown pictures, moving and still, of Brunn in childhood, adolescence, and adulthood. Close-ups, distance shots, everything. He had thought nothing could disguise her. But the yellow-haired woman before him was not the same Brunn, if it was Brunn at all. Her slender strength was reshaped now, her body blurred and broadened with the children she'd carried, her breasts heavy with milk. She stood heavily, arms hanging by her sides. Her yellow hair was long, lank, nothing like the lively, tousled curls in the pictures. Her blue eyes were duller, almost gray. But his practiced eye noticed what was not concealed. The bone structure of her face, her shoulders, the exact shape of her fingers and toes. This had to be the woman he sought. He looked for the RE tattoo, but the short wrap such women were allowed during a showing covered the area where it might have been. Two guards stood with her, their staves held to prevent the men from touching her.
Devil's own.
Satan's snare. Good thing they muted her.
Yep, but the babies look strong.
The babies were on display as well, naked cherubs in a playpen. They grinned toothlessly at the watching men. A black-haired man stood up, pushing his way past the others.
Not worth it to me. I'm not risking my soul for that.
There speaks a man without the tax. She was just as wicked before he looked at her.
And it's our duty to convert the heathen. I reckon another couple of birthings will convert her.
What? You bid for her wifing?
You might do. Might do worse.
Might do better.
They chatted on. Brunn stared past them.
Why doesn't she lower her gaze the way the other women do? She's neither virgin nor wife, and the worst has happened already.
The man in the checked shirt shivered, and the man next to him glanced over.
What is it, brother?
Nothing.
Hazel's duties as a servant required her to go into the street each day with the garbage. When she had demonstrated that she would perform this task exactly as directed, looking neither to right nor left, even when unaccompanied, Prima decided to try her out as a market girl. She was still clumsy in her sewing. She would be more marketable for other skills. So, first in the company of Mellow Tongue, Hazel went to the market to carry home those items which the garden did not produce. She was required to look at the ground 2 paces before her and carry the basket at waist height and speak to no one, not even if spoken to. Mellow Tongue answered those inquiries which must be answered. Hazel performed exactly as ordered on that and all the trips that followed. The first time she was sent out alone for just one item, she was watched from a distance by one of the other servant women, one too senior to be a market girl, but reliable in her gossip. She went directly to the correct stall, waited with head down until the stall keeper called her house name, and held out the basket and payment without looking up. She was sent again, and then, in company with the head cook, learned to haggle respectfully with the stall keepers. She took nothing on herself, she pilfered no treats, she was submissive even to the unfair scolding of the cook on the matter of some wilted greens. So, in a few months, she was sent regularly to market on market days. And there, by keeping her ears stretched to the fullest, she heard gossip about the yellow-haired outlander, the heathen woman who was in the maternity house, and then had birthed twins, and then nearly died of the birth sadness, and then moved to the nursery. Days later, she heard witch nursery. Days after that, one detail after another trickled into street talk. She said nothing. She asked no questions and told no tales. When the market girls from other houses tried to make friends with quick murmurs, she ignored them. Hazel kept her eye on Brandy, now Prudence, and Stassi, now Serenity. Day by day, the little girls seemed to forget their former life. Quick, bouncy, darting Brandy was still more active, but she had transferred her passion for blocks and construction toys to sewing and weaving. She was fascinated by the movement of the great looms in the weaving shed and had explained to Hazel, who could not figure out how they worked, how the rise and fall of rows of little rings would produce different patterns in the cloth. Both girls had friends their own age and seemed far more attached to the women who cared for them than to Hazel. Reluctantly, Hazel gave up the idea of including the littles in an escape. They were too small. They could not run and climb and fight. They would be obvious, no way to conceal the fact that they were children, and they had no training in the boys' world, so they could not pass as boys. Most of all, she could see that they were happy and secure, and that the women of the household liked them. If she could get away, if she could get Brun away, the littles would not suffer for it. No one here blamed children for things like that. They would be cared for better than she could care for them. Better, she suspected, than the distressed Spacer's home would care for them if she did get them back to Familia space safely. And they were happy. They had lost one family, one world. She could not tear them away from another. So she waited her chance. She could live here the rest of her life. She had the knack of fitting in, she always had. But she didn't want to. She had to admit she liked the food, the beautiful garden, the sense of security, the luxury of what seemed infinite space in which to move. But here she would always be an outsider. She wanted to feel part of a family again. She missed the technology, the sense she'd had in Elias Madero, of being part of a greater civilization spread across the universe. Besides, there was the blonde lady. They had exchanged names. On the whole world, only she knew who Hazel really was, where she was from. And on the whole world, only she knew the blonde lady's name. She, Hazel, could survive here. But that lady had no chance.
Brun.
Hazel rehearsed the name, keeping it alive. Even at the time, even frightened as she had been, and determined to protect the littles, She had felt a stubborn flare of rage at what the men had done to the other woman. Nothing anyone did, nothing, not ever, deserved that punishment. And Brunn had done nothing any more than Hazel had. The men had been wrong. They had stolen her. And then they had stolen her voice. Hazel knew Brunn would want to escape. Any woman would who had lived in freedom. And Brunn, even at the worst, Hazel sensed a burning determination to do more than survive. But voiceless, locked up as she was, with twin babies, she could not possibly do it alone. Hazel would have to figure out a way. It wasn't going to be easy. Not with babies. To herself, in the night, she rehearsed. But only in her head, never aloud. The things she knew to be really true. She was Hazel Takaris. Her father had been Roderick Takaris, on the engineering staff of the Elias Madero, commanded by Captain Lund. She had passed her G levels and qualified for junior apprentice in a competitive exam. Her pay scale had been upgraded once on the voyage. Brandy and Stassi had been Girion and Vorda's daughters, but Girion and Vorda were dead. The blonde woman was Brunn. Out there among the stars was a universe where girls could wear whatever they chose, look men in the eye, choose their own careers and partners. Someday she would find it again.